Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this can be a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
You got your casual Wednesday shirt on.
I do.
All right. So we're going to lead off today's show with Nathan Feather with Prime Revenue. Welcome.
Thank you, Lee.
Nathan, can you tell us a little bit about Prime Revenue? How are you serving folks?
Sure. So we help businesses improve working capital and generate cash. And we do that through a set of solutions that's called supply chain finance. And what this does is it helps buyers to extend payment terms, which generates the cash flow for them, but at the same time gives their suppliers access to on-demand early payment. So it does not push all of that burden into their supply chain. And we have companies do this primarily to help fund some sort of strategic initiative that they're undertaking.
So what is the, so usually they're about to undertake some substantial investment, and so that's where this comes into play?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Lee. Lots of companies are under a period of large disruption right now. I mean, if you look around Atlanta, we have the growing automotive industry here with folks like Mercedes just around the corner. Sure. And Kia and Porsche. And as an example, I mean, their industry is undergoing a lot of change right now with automated vehicles and electric vehicles and ride sharing. And they need to innovate to stay relevant and stay on top of the industry. And so when that happens, they need cash to do that. And there are lots of ways that they can raise cash, but a really efficient one is with supply chain finance. So that's typically when we see companies take an interest, is when they do have some sort of large initiative that they're undertaking.
Now, the term supply chain finance, is that your term, a prime revenue term, or is that an industry term?
No, I think that's more of an industry term these days. In the industry, it takes a very broad base of what's in supply chain finance, everything from factoring to what we do. But when we talk about it, we're talking about a solution that creates transparency between the buyer and the supplier and brings third-party funders into the mix to allow for the early payment for suppliers.
Can you share also a little bit about Prime Revenue's history? Like, how were you based here always? Can you tell us a little bit about Prime Revenue?
Yeah, so Prime Revenue was founded in 2003. I joined in 2006, so I've been around for quite some time.
You're the new guy.
Yeah, exactly. There's actually a couple people with longer tenure than me still at the company, which is great.
Yeah.
And we have offices here in Atlanta, in London, in Prague, and in Hong Kong now.
But your headquarters.
But Atlanta is the headquarters and always has been. And it's changed a lot since I joined. Way back then, we had no direct customers, maybe 20 employees. And today, we have close to or over 27,000 customers, and we're closing in on 200 employees. And the other big change is in the selling process. So back in 2006, the sales process was very, evangelical. Nobody knew what supply chain finance was, mm-hmm. Or why they would possibly want to learn about it, who Prime Revenue was, all those sorts of things. So it was very educational just on the industry at large. Today, I know it might not be a household term, but among finance and procurement professionals who we typically deal with, supply chain finance is a bit of a household term, which is great because now they know about it and the education process is a little less. But it also means that they have some predisposed ideas about what it is and what they want to get out of it. So that process has changed more from education about what it is to education about why we do it better and differentiation and alignment with our point of view.
But Prime Revenue has always been all in supply chain finance?
Always been all in supply chain finance.
So you're kind of specialist in this function before it was cool.
That's right. We were there before it was cool, and now we're here when it's starting
to grow. So now you get to reap the benefits of that.
That's right. And it's an exciting time for the market because in the past, it was limited to maybe Global 2000 type companies were the only ones who were actually able to implement a solution. And they only implemented it for 50, 100 suppliers. But now companies as small as $100 million in revenue are reaping the benefits of rolling out programs. And we're able to extend through, you know, more technology all the way from the largest suppliers all the way into the tail of their supply chain, and not just limited to U.S. suppliers, but suppliers all over the world.
And that's why you have 27,000.
And that's why we have 27,000 customers. Yeah, right. That's right.
So now, as it's becoming more and more accepted and just part of the way that people are doing business now, and you're positioned as kind of at the forefront of this, now your sales and marketing has shifted. Is that right?
Yeah, what their skill set has shifted from, you know, education.
Before you had to explain it.
That's right. Before we had to explain
and
what it is.
People are like, I want some, but I want to get the right partner.
Yeah, they're not quite to order taking yet, unfortunately.
Like,
but
you can't do it as software as a service yet.
Well, we are doing it. But not, you can't just click through, unfortunately, mm-hmm. to sign up. But yes, it's more about positioning the business as opposed to educating on mm-hmm. the business.
And then, so now your role as the CFO, has that changed over the years?
No, it's been the same since the beginning. It's changed in terms of the scope.
Just now there's more.
But now there's more, yeah. And it's, I'd say, you know, we've been through a lot of business cycles in the past 12 years, from 2006 timeframe when it was growth at all costs, venture capital was easy to come by, to 2008, 2009, where things shifted a little bit and it was more of a hunker down and be profitable, kind of shifted back into a growth at all costs mode, it seems like. But that's not how we're operating the business these days. We're focused on profitable growth. We think, you know, at some point in time, a business needs to grow up and generate its own cash, its own profit, right, and be self-funding. And that's where we are. We're not out raising new rounds of equity every day.
Piles of cash.
That's right. That's not how we think the day-to-day operations of a business should be run.
And then, so what part of this is the most rewarding for you?
Well, the value we create for our customers is great, but we try to give back a lot to the Atlanta community. It's really served us well, and we want to give back to it. We all know that we're very fortunate to have great jobs and live here in Atlanta. So we've tried to focus on, in each office, in each location, a few local groups to work with. And here in Atlanta, we focused on Project Open Hand. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they are all about feeding the homeless and also providing meals to those of limited mobility. I think we're going there in 2 weeks, I think, again, to go and pack meals and deliver
meals. As an organization.
As an organization, yeah. Which is, I'll come back to that, which is great for a number of reasons. But so we work with Project Open Hand. We work with Piedmont Park, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and with Families First, especially around the holidays. Mm-hmm. And then we got the opportunity to work with Cristo Rey in the past year. I don't know, Lee, if you're familiar with those guys mm-hmm. at all. So they're a great story. They're part of a network of high schools, and there's now one in Atlanta. And their mission is to provide a quality education for kids from economically disadvantaged parts of the city. And they want to prepare them, they say, for college and for life. And part of that is a work study program. So a lot of the big Atlanta companies are involved. And last year, we got the chance to be involved as well. So we got to host 4 students from freshmen to seniors who would basically be high school interns for us. And it was fantastic. Their enthusiasm and their thirst for knowledge really inspired our team as well. And it gave some of our folks a chance to coach and mentor that maybe wouldn't have that opportunity in their day-to-day role. Right. So that was awesome. And we can't wait to get another 4 students in the next school year.
Now, when you're doing this kind of community work, and is that the culture of your company is just about serving and giving back? Or how did this come about?
Yeah, that's definitely part of our culture. And our culture is important to the company. We hire on it. Our culture is pride plus integrity, which is performance, respect, innovation, diversity, and excellence with integrity. And so we use that really as the cornerstone of the business. We use it to hire people, to fire people if necessary. Anytime we bring on new folks, we have a prime revenue university where no matter what office you start in, you come into Atlanta to learn about the business and meet your teammates and the like. And the first part of that every time, the first hour or two, is our CEO speaking about our values.
The values, mission.
And the values and the mission.
The why of what we're doing and why it's important.
That's exactly right. So it's not just, you know, every company has values. I'm sure Enron had values put up on the wall somewhere. But for us, you know, we're really serious about it. And it's how we make decisions internally.
So now, how did that come about? Since you've been with the firm since almost the beginning, has that always been the case?
So we've always had values, of course. I think they really, really became a more key driver for us when our current CEO came on board. And that was in 2008 or 2009. I can't remember. So 2009. It's been a long time. And so he brought that set of values and really, you know, instilled it into the company. And it's been kind of, now it's part of the core DNA of Prime Revenue.
Now, you mentioned that employees, that part of the onboarding is this way. How are when you're hiring, what are you looking for? Like, what's the quality or skills you need to grow?
Yeah, so we hire for smart, hungry, and humble, we say. So people need to be intelligent. They need to have a hunger to do well and to learn. And they also need to be humble. We're definitely a team environment. So we're not going to succeed on the heroics of one person. It's definitely a team.
So you like grinders, the people that are
so in there grinders.
Battling.
Yeah. We need to be in there battling. And, you know, we're still a small company, right? We're approaching 200 people. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to be a little bit flexible in what you're doing. It may not be the same tomorrow as it was today. And so that's, I think that's exciting. And, you know, it gives us the opportunity. Being in Atlanta gives us the opportunity to hire great interns from our universities and also to hire, you know, really experienced folks from the fintech community we have here in Atlanta. So
now, were you part of the Fintech South?
We were. We were there. It was a great experience. We learned some amazing facts about the community in Atlanta, the size, the breadth of it.
Right. That we were there as well doing radio interviews. Yeah. I thought the venue was beautiful, the way that they had it. I had never been to a business event there before. I thought they did a nice job.
I hadn't either. That was really nice. The breakout sessions were separate enough from each other, but still close to the
right. I thought they were able to create some intimacy in such a large building. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So that going to events like that are important to your firm?
Definitely important to us to kind of be part of that community.
Like, how do you attack that? There was, 1,500, a few thousand people there. Were you exhibiting?
We were exhibiting. So we had an exhibit set up and we were just out there, you know, trying to interact with the other folks out the community at the conference.
But like when you have like kind of a complex story to tell, like what's your objective inside of a kind of a booth like that? Like what are you doing?
There, it's not selling for us. It's more for recruiting, educating and recruiting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So, but how do you get people in to have even a conversation with you?
Well, we had a fantastic giant $100 bill that you could put your face in. Yeah, and get a picture.
Right.
And then, you know, we didn't just have our folks sitting behind the desk waiting. They were out kind of trying to bring people to us.
To tell the story.
To tell our story. And not necessarily even the story so much about what we do and who we serve, but about who we are and, you know, the type of people we have on our team.
Now, for the listeners out there, what is the pain that they're having where your solution is something they should consider?
Yeah, their pain, if they are corporate that's $100 million or more in revenue, and they have some sort of strategic initiative that they're looking to fund, or they're just trying to improve their cash flow, then they should contact us. We can come in and do an assessment to determine whether or not this is a good fit for them, or just go down, you know, before we go
whether
down
whether supply chain finance as a whole is a good fit, or if working with you guys is a good fit.
Both. Yeah, there may be instances where another solution is better, right? It's not all, we're not the going to be the solution for everybody. Right. But we'll come in and do that and then determine the best path forward and really work with their teams, both their treasury and their procurement teams, to implement a solution and to kind of hold their hand through the entire process until they've achieved their goals.
So that's part of your deliverable, is this kind of super service, white glove service to make sure that their objective is attained?
So that's exactly right. We want every customer to be a customer and a referenceable customer 10 years from now. So we're not just about throwing some technology in front of them and letting them go off on their own. It's very high touch service as well.
And is that because it's complex, or is it because they have kind of trepidations?
A little bit of both. So, you know, typically when we go down this path, it's the treasury or the finance group that has an initiative on cash flow, but they're not the ones with the relationships with their supply chain, right?
Right.
That's procurement. And so we help to bridge those internal gaps, as well as educate procurement and hold their hand on their discussions with suppliers. Because typically, the procurement folks are focused on the product and the cost, and, you know, maybe on inventory type
right,
measures.
Not the relationships
like
with the supplier.
Not necessarily the relationship or the payment term. That may be a secondary right. topic. So we educate them, and then we'll support them as much as they want in having those conversations with the suppliers until they feel confident in going off on their own and doing it.
So the process is, at first, you have some sort of an assessment, or they go through some sort of assessment, then you're able to kind of prescribe some sort of solution, and then you help them execute?
That's exactly right. So we will, we call it a working capital assessment, but we'll obtain the spend for one of our customers. Who are they purchasing from? What are their terms? And then we'll go through an assessment of that and come up with a roadmap. Say, look, here's, in some instances, you're paying much more slowly than the average for this industry, or you have this supplier in here twice under different names and they have different terms, or whatever the case may be, and help them, work with them to determine the path for the gain, for the cash flow gain. Mm-hmm. And then once we agree on what that strategy is going to be, then we will work with them and hold their hands and train and educate them to go and actually do it, to right. go obtain it.
Now, is that a difficult conversation with the supplier, or is that something like you help them manage that? Because you're asking the supplier to change in some manner?
Yeah, so we're asking the supplier to change in some manner, yes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's not. As supply chain finance has grown, more and more suppliers are already familiar with it or familiar with us. Mm-hmm. And their response may be, oh, I've been on this before. I know what this is. What are the terms? What are the rates? How's it work? Okay, I'm in. Or sometimes it's the first time they've encountered it, in which case, then yes, it can be a difficult discussion to talk through. Here's what's going to happen and here's why. But we really work with our customers to help them explain the why, not just what's happening. But, you know, if their businesses are successful, then there should be more purchasing from their suppliers and
right,
giving their suppliers access to go invest in their business as well. So it should be a win-win solution. I know people hate that term, but it really should be a win-win solution for both. It shouldn't be like a hammer looking for a nail somewhere.
Well, if somebody wants to have more substantive conversation, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of us is through our website at primerevenue.com, and they can go to contact us, and some of our team will respond, you know, very quickly and find out more about their opportunity.
Now, what do you need more of right now?
Great people.
You're hiring right now?
We're hiring right now. It's a great place to be hiring in, but it's also a competitive hiring environment. So
what is the person you're hiring for? Like, what are you
looking for? All sorts of roles and all over the world. But here for Atlanta, we're always looking for sales and marketing resources, business development executives, and product folks, both developers, QA, product management, the whole life cycle. We invest our most of our investment is in those areas, sales and marketing and product. So we're always looking for developers, QA engineers, product management, sales.
Do the salespeople have to have fintech background?
They do not. Preferably, they would have some experience selling a relatively complex solution and more of a solution sale. But the fintech piece, we can teach. The sales skills, it's harder to teach.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And that's Nathan Feather with Prime Revenue, primerevenue.com. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Lee.
All right. How was that, Katie? You like that?
Yeah, that was great. It was good.
All right. Next up here on Atlanta Business Radio, we have, what do we got? Benjamin Rudolph. Benjamin, you are with Relevance Advisors. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did you learn anything there?
I did.
How's your supply chain finance situation?
I'm glad I learned more about it today.
So what are you doing over there at Relevance Advisors? How are you serving folks?
So we're a digital marketing agency specializing in search marketing. So we offer paid media, SEO, and analytics services. The elevator pitch is that we help companies drive traffic to their website, measure results, and optimize performance.
So how'd you get into SEO?
So originally, I worked at Comcast in Philadelphia, and I managed their partnership with Google.
Uh-huh.
And this was back in 2004. So when you sign up for high-speed internet service, they would set your homepage to comcast.net. And at the top of the page, there was a search box powered by Google.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did a search from that page and clicked an ad, Comcast and Google would share the revenue. And at the scale of Comcast, which is the largest internet service provider, that was a lot of revenue. And it was all about, you know, managing the ad revenue because it was a big driver. And this was, you know, in the 2000s where online revenue was growing significantly. And so they had sent me to a conference in, I believe, 2005, all about search engines. And there were about 1,000 people there who do what we do now around picking keywords, writing ads, and setting bids. And that was kind of an eye-opening moment. And that led me to move to the agency side in 2007 and ultimately start my own agency in 2010.
So going from a big corporate entity to having your own shop, how was that transition? Because that's totally different experience, right? Like you don't have a help desk like you used to.
Right? I do not have a help desk. I am the IT
department.
You are
the
now.
IT department.
I would say the biggest change was when I worked at Comcast, if I called a company and said, Comcast is interested in talking to you, everyone would return my call. And now as an independent entity, getting people to call you back is a little more challenging. I will say that we are in a space that is complex and in great demand. So whether or not they want to work with us or someone else, almost every company needs help with their online marketing. And so trying to find out, you know, are you the right fit and helping them, you know, compare most people, you know, this is not something they shop for every day.
Right.
And so...
But it's something that there's a lot of shady people in this world, which you got to kind of deal with.
Yes. Yeah, so there is a reputation. First of all, there's no degree in online marketing.
Right.
And... that makes it difficult to determine, you know, are people as good as who they say they are? And you're really only as good as your most recent engagement because someone who looks like a genius today could look not as smart tomorrow.
Because Google's changing their way they're indexing, right? So then just because you're on the front page today doesn't mean you're going to be there next week.
That's exactly right. It's a moving target. And so what I would advise clients, whether or not they work with us, is every piece of advice you get from, your digital marketing consultant should make sense to you as a business person, whether or not you understand code or some of the complexity that goes behind the scenes. I think there is a lot of, you know, black box. People don't want to share secrets. Ultimately, the number one factor affecting your performance on the search engines is content. And so if you can only invest in one thing, I advise clients to invest in content. And so if you want to be seen as the most authoritative source on a particular topic, you need to invest in content and also do a search on Google, see who ranks number one, and look at their description of the products or services that you're selling and compare that to your own website experience.
So now when you're working with customers and you're saying, hey, you need more content, what does that even mean? Like just be smart, just write things like talk about things? Like, what does content mean?
Yeah, well, obviously it's going to depend on what your business is. But for example, we've done work with the Ovarian Cancer Research Fund. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those can be people looking for what are symptoms of ovarian cancer, what are the stages of ovarian cancer. And they had a page on their website that listed all four stages. But of course, if you're diagnosed with ovarian cancer, you only care about the stage that you or your family member have. And they have a scientific advisory board that could write highly authoritative content. And so they actually created pages dedicated to each of these stages. And those are now the most highly trafficked on their website outside of the homepage. And I wasn't able to predict the future on this. I was looking at the search data. I could see what people were searching for and use that to inform what content to create. And we refer to that as a data-driven content strategy.
Mm-hmm. So you're not just saying, hey, let's think of topics. You're saying, what are people searching for? And let's create content around what people are looking for.
Right. And I would say it works in both directions. Obviously, you know, as an outsider, I can say, you know, here are three topics that I would find interesting. Oftentimes the clients come to the, come with ideas themselves, or their customers have ideas. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of things can be determined, you know, just by looking at people's comments or, feedback saying, you know, I was looking for this information, I couldn't find it. Whether or not that's information you want or don't want on your website, people are coming looking for that on Google.
Now, as part of a digital marketing strategy, how important is pay-per-click? Is that a must-have or a nice-to-have, or it depends?
Yeah, well, I would say that if you are not buying ads on Google, you are at a disadvantage to those that are. Because if you do a search on Google for most commercial-related queries, first you'll see up to 4 paid ads. Then you'll see local listings. Then you will see what was traditionally seen as the number one organic result. By the way, Google's also including things like smart answers, where they attempt to answer the question with what they think is the most relevant answer to your question. There are also people also ask, where they include a series of questions. So what was originally considered number one on the page now appears number 10 or 11. And so while, yes, I can rank number one for a particular term organically, number one means below the fold. So someone has to scroll. And on a mobile device, you're several scrolls down the page. Typically only 2 ads appear above the fold on a mobile device. And now for nearly every client, over half of their traffic is coming from a mobile device.
Now, so this sounds overwhelming for most. I would imagine most of your clients are kind of retail-y type clients, are you B2B?
Yeah, we have both B2B and B2C. And obviously they're going after different markets and trying to achieve different objectives.
Because there's different strategies for B2C as opposed to B2B, right? Or
there are
all the same.
Yeah, and we have a large client who has a multi-location business. So it's not only where do they rank on Google, but also where do they rank on Yelp and where do they rank on other local listing sites. They have to be found on Google Maps and Apple Maps. And not only that, they have to have the correct store hours, address, phone number, menu prices. You know, depending on what your business is, people might find you in another place. And if they have a bad experience I'm sure you've experienced this, where you show up at a store that says it's open, but is not.
Right.
You know, do you blame Google or do you blame the store?
Right.
And you just assume that, people give a lot of faith to Google. They just assume Google has it right and they have it wrong.
Right.
I would say that's not always the case, but people blame the company more so than they'll blame Google.
So when your clients work with you, are you kind of full serve, where you kind of are the de facto marketing arm for them, or are you just telling them what to do and they're going and executing?
So typically, we don't offer every service. So typically there's someone doing design, someone doing development, somebody doing email. We're very focused on kind of the demand generation and measurement side. Mm-hmm. We do see ourselves as a trusted advisor. So we're happy to answer questions, and give our opinion on things like, do you think this is a good looking website? But we're not the ones to develop or design that. And I would also say that, as much I can drive 1 million visitors to your website and get fired if those people don't take an action.
Right.
And so, making sure that
It's better to have 100 of the right people than 1 million of the wrong people.
That's right. And people do ask this question, like, what's the right number of unique visitors for my website?
11.
Right. And I don't know the answer. I can't tell you if the traffic you're getting today is the right traffic. but I can look at trends. I can measure key actions and then work with the client to understand, you know, are these key actions that matter to you?
Right.
And if they are, let's get more of them. And if they're not, let's go after somewhere else because this is not working.
Now, do you work with them in their kind of funnel? Like, okay, this is the top of the funnel. We want to reach people and communicate in this manner. This is a little farther down. They already are educated. We want them to do this at this point. Are you kind of hand-holding them through the whole process?
We do. Obviously, one of the keys is at the beginning of an engagement, having a discovery process where we understand what are their business objectives. Because oftentimes they'll say, I want search and I want search advertising. When in fact, no one is searching for their product or service. Maybe they've invented something completely new.
Right.
And therefore, search, while you can rank number one for a term that no one is searching for, that's not going to help you achieve your desired objective. And that's why understanding the business objective, we understand the tactics, but those tactics depend on the overall business objectives. And then setting up the measurements in place so that we can determine, is this a success or is this a failure? And I would say the biggest challenge for any company with their digital marketing agency is, you know, understanding what is the expectation and how do we measure success against that expectation.
Because a lot of time the consumer doesn't know really what they want. They know kind of the outcome they'd like, but they don't know how to communicate exactly the tactics to achieve that. They've heard some terms and maybe read a blog post or, you know, read an entrepreneur article.
Yes. Or alternatively, like for example, if you are by default, Google's cookie is 30 days. So if you paid to get somebody to your website, but the cookie expires after 30 days, but your sales cycle takes 90 days, then you're not able to accurately measure the success of the traffic you're paying for. And so it looks like you're driving all of this traffic that is not converting, when in fact, it actually may be very successful. Another misleading metric is bounce rate. Those are people who view one page and leave. We get a lot of people who view one page and leave on our website, but those people could be coming, looking up our phone number and then calling. And that's actually
a good thing.
Yeah, that's actually a positive thing.
Right.
But again, you know, people just look at a number and say, is this a good number or a bad number? I don't know. But I can certainly draw some conclusions based on, you know, the context.
Now, how is Amazon coming into play in people's marketing mix?
Yeah. So one, we see e-commerce is our fastest growing sector. And within e-commerce, if you search for a product on Google, typically Amazon ranks number one. When you click on that Amazon link, that's actually a search results page on Amazon, just like on Google, and that has sponsored ads and organic listings. And so whether or not you choose to sell your product on Amazon, you are competing with Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And then figuring out, you know, do I want to sell on Amazon? And then within Amazon, how do I sell on Amazon? And increasingly over the last year, I've discovered this whole world of Amazon, similar to the world of Google, where there are, you know, agencies and consultants that specialize in this space. And, you know, we're taking our experience from search and helping people optimize for the Amazon search engine.
What about for voice?
Voice as well. Obviously, you know, if you, the challenge on voice is typically there's only one result.
Right.
And so if you're not that one result, you don't exist.
That's a truly zero sum game.
That's right. But ultimately, a lot of our role is education and helping clients understand, you know, what are the available places we can show up and what are the things that we would need to do in order to show up. We encourage our clients to get an Amazon Echo. Or a Google Home device, play around with Siri, because the best way to understand the technology is to interact with it.
Now, do you think that voice is that a fad or a trend in your opinion?
You know, I think that voice is definitely a trend, but at the same time, it's really just the input. So instead of typing something in with your hands, you're saying it with your voice, and there's still, you know, some algorithm in the back end, and there's still multiple results. It's just a question of, you know, on voice, you're not going to sit there and let, you know, Google or Amazon read you 10 results.
It's just difficult to browse voice.
Right. Absolutely.
Where you can scroll in seconds.
Absolutely. And so I think the key is understanding, again, what are the business objectives, making sure you appear in the places that are relevant for a particular query, making sure that your website is up to date with the most accurate information. So that someone, no matter how they search for you, has the ability to find you.
Now, so what is the pain your prospective customers are having?
you know, I would say it's a variety of things, whether it's a change in Google's algorithm, whether or not, you know, keywords are now more expensive. And so now we have to pay more. You know, now I want to should I be advertising on these social media networks?
So your client is someone who's already spending money with a consultant of some kind right now, and they're just trying new ones because they're frustrated with their results, or are they new to this and then they're kind of, you're educating them?
Yeah. I mean, we see three different scenarios. One is they're not doing it at all. One is they are doing it themselves. And the third is that they're doing it with somebody else. And I would say the most common would be they're using somebody else and are unhappy for some reason. And of course, our first question is, you know, what is actually happening? Is this a problem because they're not listening to this consultant, or is it that they actually are listening and they're giving them bad advice? And usually, you know, based on what they're saying, we can, you know, quickly understand, you know, what we think is happening. And then, of course, if we get access to their accounts, we can, you know, make a more detailed assessment.
Now, when somebody launches something new, what is a reasonable amount of time to see a result?
You know, it obviously depends, because, of course, if Coca-Cola launches something new, it's right. more likely to get picked up than if a startup launches something new. But, you know, I would say you should appear on Google within the first, mm-hmm. you know, 30 days. And then, you know, we usually say on SEO, like if we start working with you today, hopefully you would see a result in 3 to 6 months. You would start to see improvement, depending on exactly what it is we're doing or the damage. Some clients have a penalty, and that can often impact them. Maybe they're invisible on Google, or maybe they, you know, are on page 10. Or are they in position 7 and want to get to position 5?
Right.
And depending on the category, that might be easy or hard.
Now, what compelled you to found the Search Engine Marketing Professional Organization?
Well, to be clear, I didn't found the organization, but I started the Atlanta chapter.
Right.
And it was actually an opportunity that was brought to me saying, you know, this is a national organization. We don't have it in Atlanta. You know, how can we start it here? And so we just started what we said, let's just do an event and see if anyone shows up. And there were over 100 people. And it was very clear that there was interest and excitement around this topic. People, you know, were constantly looking for information. In particular, there's a lot of Search 101 content available. But, you know, for people like me, how do I learn, you know,
right. So this is next for the search engine nerds that are just want to kind of really be good at it and tweak it?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
is it for the beginner just to learn?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it serves both audiences, but I think it's definitely geared more towards people who have some level of experience who are looking to further their education.
So you're really digging in deep and really trying to understand this at a high level.
That's right.
That's what it's for, though, the
yes.
organization.
Yes.
And you have how many members right now?
I don't know the exact count. And there are also other organizations in Atlanta like AMA and AMA that right. are looking to achieve similar objectives. But, you know, there's definitely a large contingent of agencies and consultants here in Atlanta, which is the marketing hub of the Southeast. Google has an office here. Facebook has an office right. here. So there's definitely a lot of available audience for the organization.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about your organization, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah. Well, I like to say that if you can't find us on Google, we're probably not the right consultant to be using. But our website is relevanceadvisors.com. And, you know, there are obviously numerous ways to contact us on the website.
And Benjamin Rudolph, you can find you on LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, Mike, it's your turn. Lean in there. Say something smart.
Hello, Lee. How are you?
You got to get a lot closer than that. You missed
Lee.
The whole training. You missed the whole training.
I did. Came in a little
you
bit
know,
late.
These divas show up here at the last second. So Mike Cosentino.
That is correct.
Correct.
Yep.
Is Big Peach Running Company. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Our producer over here.
I saw the CrossFit Shambly, a little shout out there.
Yeah.
Looks like
she's a semi-professional runner.
No, I'm not. I ran in college.
Very cool. I think that's professional.
College today, you know how that goes.
Well, you'll appreciate the conversation we're going to have on a couple of different levels.
Yeah, I definitely will.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about Big Peach? How are you serving folks?
Sure. Well, Big Peach Running Company, we've been around since 2004. We're a retailer and we have footwear, apparel, accessories, stuff that I'm sure Katie is very familiar with and
yes.
using on a very regular basis.
Of course.
So we have stores in and around the Atlanta metropolitan area. New project coming up, Big Peach on Wheels will be out this summer. It'll be our first mobile experience that will be what we believe is a first-class fitting and retailing opportunity to kind of bridge the gap for those who can't make it to one of our stores. But even more importantly than that, we talk about our mission being how we just live to, quite frankly, support and enhance the pedestrian active lifestyle in and around Atlanta, and more so than the number of doors we have or number of pairs of shoes that we sell. How many people can we get out walking and running in this wonderful city that we call home?
Now, what is the kind of the landscape for retail in the running right now? Because I would think running stores have a slight advantage over a lot of retail when competing with the Amazon of the world, that it there is fit is super important and getting it exactly right is critical. And you can educate the consumer a lot better than a website can.
Certainly that is true. And one of the natural advantages when it comes to at least our channel of retail against that online shopping experience that exists. At the same time, one of the things that we have to acknowledge is different people have different, you know, drivers as to where and why they buy. Mm-hmm. And so we are very, very interested in that person who needs the level of instruction and product knowledge that we have. And at the same time, you know, there are plenty of people who, and I'll continue to use Katie as an example, that have plenty of experience, but they may just need a fresh dose of motivation, or they may need insight about a product that didn't exist when they made a purchase last, or, you know, quite frankly, when they were training for an event the last time. So our offering certainly caters to those who are getting started, but our assortment and the way we set our team is meant to serve those who are getting started, as well as those who have made the commitment for quite some time.
And is it critical to have each store almost be its own community, like a community organizer and the place where people, a destination for people to go to kind of hang out with others like them?
You know, that's a great question. And the reason I say that is I absolutely believe that it is. And whether it's the products that we're carrying or the special events that we're doing, it may exist differently in our Decatur store than what it does in our Kennesaw store. We do not have stores anywhere that are not part of the Atlanta MSA. And yet the difference between Suwanee or Brookhaven is pretty marked, whether it's the demographics or the people who are showing up at our group runs or the types of activities that we're doing on a Saturday morning. So it is very localized.
And then how do you, as the leader of the organization, give autonomy to the people in the stores, but still keep that brand true to itself?
So certainly, you know, we have a set of core values. I know that was mentioned earlier. We were one of the organizations that elected not to establish core values at the onset. In fact, I was very particular about not writing or even suggesting that we discuss core values until we got to our 10-year mark. That way we could look back at our history and say, well, what have we been really, really consistent about? What has served not just our business, but quite frankly, our guests really, really well over the course of the last 5 or 10 years? And then what can we commit to that really would be unchangeable as we look into the future as far as we can? And one of the core values is our best business asset is our team. More so than any product we have on our shelves, certainly more so than a fit process or a lease agreement that we might hold. The reality is the autonomy that you mentioned, Lee, is evident in the decisions that somebody who may have just come out of training and working with a guest right now, or somebody who's one of our general managers in one of our stores. At the end of the day, he or she is going to have a conversation and a much, much, much better understanding of exactly what is needed to fully satisfy the guest or ultimately fully satisfy the rest of the team.
Now, when you started out, did you envision kind of Big Peach all over, taking over the world? Did you just want one store? What was the initial vision?
So similar to the mission earlier, our focus was Atlanta, and that continues to be the case. Atlanta, in my opinion, is the best city on the planet in which to lead a pedestrian active lifestyle. And there was opportunity here when we opened our first store. I believe there is opportunity continuing in front of us and certainly down the road. So although we have some ideas about what might make sense, perhaps outside of Atlanta, maybe even outside of the state of Georgia, right now we're having too much fun and there's plenty of reason to stay focused on this.
And then how many stores do you have right now in Atlanta?
So we have 7 stores.
7 stores, and you see that number growing?
I think it's a possibility. Like I said, you know, what we're doing this summer, Big Peach on Wheels will be, you know, it's a 25-foot truck. It'll be fully experiential, full audio, full video, obviously footwear wall, people can be inside of it, people can be outside of it, whether they're getting fit, trying on product, enjoying, you know, what might be a post-race celebration or in an environment corporately where we need to bridge that gap of convenience. So I think there are ways for us to connect with the marketplace that may or may not necessarily mean that we have to just always open another brick and mortar location.
Now, how important are the kind of the shoe companies in your business?
So certainly they're important, and it's been an interesting journey for us watching. And you mentioned earlier the online considerations. One of the things that's been, you know, most fascinating to me is watching them try to get better and better at retail, whether it's been corporate retail where they're opening stores in major markets, whether it's outlet stores, or now what would be referred to as direct to consumer. And I think at the end of the day, and I think you leaned into this earlier, I believe the next shakeout or right sizing in and around retail in general will actually be some of those e-commerce possibilities that exist today. And the reason I say that, if Katie wears a pair of New Balance or Brooks or Asics or Nike, and she knows, well, gosh, I think that's the brand that I want, or I'm not sure, I'm going to look at some other shoes that might be comparable or that I've had in the past. She may go to the Nike website. She may go to the New Balance website. And she may visit Big Peach Running Company if she's familiar with us. But all these other e-commerce retailers that aren't the manufacturer of the product, but don't have the ability to give her these opportunities to try on multiple products and right. share plenty of information, it'll be interesting to see where they are when they're basically just a reseller of products that they're not manufacturing.
But I'm familiar with the Cobb County location where you have a Cobb County location and just literally down the road is a New Balance store.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. You're the one on Johnson Ferry. We have right. a couple of Cobb County in Kennesaw and then you're East right. Cobb specifically.
But that happens to be just, I don't even know if it's a half a mile.
I don't think so. And just speaking to that, there isn't that much distance between us and a Roadrunner Sports. There's also right. a Dick's, as you know, in East Cobb. So there's
plenty of
competition.
That's just the nature of the beast. But like when it's specific like that, does that tell you like, hey, we shouldn't have New Balance in our store or you have New Balance in your store? How do you make that decision?
Our decision is not based on that. Quite frankly, the belief we have is our biggest competition are those things that are taking people away from the lifestyle we serve. And so all of a sudden, if you elect to...
So people who don't walk or run.
Or don't have the same reason that they thought they would or might have had. If you buy season tickets to the Atlanta Braves, for example, this summer, but didn't have them last summer, your ability to train for a fall half marathon is probably less just based on where you're spending some of that discretionary time.
Right.
Whether you were shopping at the New Balance store or coming to Big Peach Running Company. So although we're aware of different pricing strategies other retailers might be employing or where people may be opening physical locations, it is by no means our biggest concern in any market we have the good fortune of serving.
So the challenge I would think, or correct me if I'm wrong, and then Benjamin, you might want to jump in here. He's the SEO expert.
Yep, I had a chance to listen to a little bit of that. It was very interesting.
This is a prime prospect for you, right? This is somebody that you like to have conversations with.
Absolutely.
And then probably Nathan, he's got supply chain issues. I'm sure you can help him with the financing of that. But so we're going to give him some consulting here. Is your biggest market the person who is not a runner that could be a runner, which there's a vast majority of the population, right? Probably what, 90%, 80 something percent aren't?
So I'll share this with you. This isn't exactly.
Isn't that true?
There are too many people right. who are not a runner.
It's got to be 70, 80%.
You know, I don't know the percentage. It has been stated not too long ago that 23 to 24% of people who are considered an Atlantan, people who live in the greater Atlanta area, consider themselves a runner or a walker. But that statistic can be very misleading because you only have to do it about two or three times a year
right,
exactly. to end up in that 24%.
Right.
So it's at least 76.
Okay. So let's say even 2/3 of the people are sedentary. So those are people that could be your customer.
Breaks my heart.
Right? But that's the vast majority of the people. But then there's the people that probably the Katie's of the world that have to run. She has to exercise or else her head explodes. Right?
I'm absolutely with you on that.
So I don't know what percent. That's got to be just a few percent.
It is. It's a much smaller percentage right? of our
but
business.
But she's probably buys shoes all the time. Like she's turning over.
We're
shoes.
Looking at each other yeah. right now. So you have to answer right? that, Katie.
Yeah. I mean, pretty consistently. Sometimes I let them go too long. Yeah.
So do you focus on the heavy user or do you try to move, you know, this mass a little bit?
So it's more the maybe somewhat in between, but we don't not focus on any of those. Again, 76%, that's a huge opportunity for us, right? I mean, that's why I believe there's still so much opportunity in and around Atlanta. It's that 76%.
Right, and we're in America.
And we're in America. And right, some like of the statistics are so disappointing, right. Very troubling. And it's, you know, impacting the workforce. It impacts the school system. It impacts families and friends, neighborhoods. So yes, there's plenty of work to be done there. At the same time, whether you look at our special event calendar, you look at the products we carry, you look at the services that we offer, somebody like Katie could come in and feel really, really good about the fact there may be a brand she's only recently heard of, even though she is deep, deep, deep in the lifestyle, and she gets a chance to try it on. And we have to have those products for those more seasoned and veteran athletes. At the same time, someone who comes into our store and might be intimidated to walk into a place that has running in the name of the business itself can get a big, broad smile, a very genuine welcome, and then somebody to completely take them in and say, it doesn't matter how little you know, or quite frankly, maybe how much research you've done before you've taken your first steps in here. We're going to make this really, really simple by asking the right questions, really, really listening, and then taking all of this inventory that might be very foreign to you right now and making it make sense to you as an individual.
Because like Nathan mentioned earlier, his service is very white glove. It sounds like you have to do that to differentiate in the marketplace.
Absolutely. We talk about, again, going back to that core value, it's not one product. It's not our fit process. It's our team. And similar to what Nathan said, it's the team that ultimately determines how white that glove is and what type of concierge level service you're delivering.
Right. And then Benjamin, from his online presence, he has to have content that touches on every one of those groups, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you want to rank for a particular topic, you have to have relevant content on your website. And I do think certainly in Atlanta, you know, being Big Peach Running Company, having locations that are local, I think that's helpful. And talking about events, I know there are group runs. I've been at the store where I think they do some kinds of race registrations, or you have to pick things up in the store. And that's a perfect target audience where people, you know, are exposed to the store, see the merchandise, there's clothing, there's other things there. Become aware of some of the events, but ultimately it's about building relationships. And, you know, there is an advantage that Big Peach has over Amazon, which is there's a local store where you can walk in and somebody can, you know, take a video of your fit and, you know, figure out what's the right fit for you. There are the people who work in the store are runners themselves, so they can give you advice on, you know, what's it like?
Right. So building a community is the lifeblood of his organization. It has to be a community. It can't be a shoe store.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's changed with, you know, search engines used to be much more about links. And increasingly, it's about social signals, about how many people follow you and like you on Facebook, as well as reviews. So how do you engage your audience? And, you know, people do look online and say, you know, why should I shop at this store versus somewhere else?
So he has to have a Yelp strategy, a Google strategy, that the reviews are there showing up.
That's no longer just about Google. And in fact, if you search for your brand on Google, you will see not just your own website, but you'll also see review sites or, you know, running review sites or Atlanta running sites. And there's Atlanta Track Club, right? There are places where people talk about running. And it's not just about what you say yourself, but what other people who are interested in running say about you.
But if somebody searched New Balance running shoe, it's going to be difficult for him to rank, isn't it?
I would think it would be hard to outrank certainly New Balance, but to the extent that he offers...
And Amazon.
I mean,
Zappos.
Absolutely. That's going to be challenging. And that's an opportunity where you could buy the keyword New Balance running shoes in the areas where you compete.
Local.
Absolutely.
And then, so the geo-targeting could help him.
That's right. And or you could rank for terms like New Balance Brookhaven.
Right.
You know, you could go for a hyper local strategy in a place where, you know, is New Balance going to have a Brookhaven page on their website? My guess is not. Maybe they do. But that's an opportunity where, again, use your strengths. You are Big Peach Running in Atlanta.
Right. So, leverage that.
Absolutely.
So now, Mike, for you, is this stuff like, are you focused so much on the stores and the community and the human beings and less so with the digital, or does this kind of the technology force you to play in that arena as well?
It certainly does. And it was, if nothing else, reassuring to hear what was said. One of the things that we've done over the last 18 months is be really, really hyper-focused on our testimonials, not just what's online, but how we use them maybe more proactively. With being a white glove-minded organization, the reality is we have the good fortune, and we say all the time that we just have to win 101 out of 100 times on service.
That's
that is our calling card. That exactly. is the community. That is the relationship. Right. And to not be able to put that out somewhat organically, but also then somewhat proactively to indicate that, yes, if you go looking for us, you're going to find a long litany of reviews from people who are probably just like you, whether you are a total novice or someone more like Katie. But how can we use that in our content, on our own website, in other areas with our partners, including some of those that were mentioned? And I think we're starting to see some yield from that more intentional use of testimonials.
Good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more about Big Peach, and they're getting ready maybe for the Peachtree Road Race, you're involved in that, I'm sure.
That is absolutely right.
You're bringing
it's
the
a
truck?
Season unto its own. So
you bring your vehicle to that?
It'll be a July launch. Anybody who wants to learn more about the vehicle, and especially for those who may have employees or clients or constituents they want to take care of, it would simply be on wheels at bigpeachrunningco.com. That is our website as well, bigpeachrunningco.com. Certainly somebody can drop me a line, Mike, M-I-K-E, at bigpeachrunningco.com. And then all of the socials that you might expect we have, and they are event-driven, they are content, they are not about, well, you need to come in and do our buy three, get one free on socks. There's going to be content to make you want to get out there and put one foot in front of the other.
Now, that vehicle, you're looking for events for that to go to? Is that why you have it?
So our belief is there are markets in, whether it's, let's say, 55 plus communities that we just don't have the good fortune of serving
right.
consistently right now. Instead of being at local races and handing out promotional materials, why aren't we not at the finish lines actually retailing?
Right.
If we go back to the service and my belief that we just always have to win, I also recognize that even as the pricing and manufacturers have started to get their inventory levels in line from all the bankruptcies that happened not that long ago, the reality is if somebody is that committed to saving 5 cents or 5%,
that's
we're probably not the place
fit.
For everything right. they need to buy. Can you save some money at Big Peach Running Company? Absolutely. Can you achieve a discount? Certainly you can. But if they are most driven by the lowest price, we're not for them.
Right.
So it's a rally cry for us that convenience is the battleground. We're going to win on service. We'll probably lose on price, but convenience is the battleground. And now coming to a place like this, and at lunchtime, having people be able to get fit and be able to get enthused about the AJC Peachtree Road Race coming up, my goodness, why would that not be something they'd think about for a few minutes right. at lunch?
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. That's bigpeachrunningco.com if you want more information. And you got locations all over the city.
We do.
All right. Thank you so much. And Katie, did you notice how he knew I wasn't an athlete? You can tell just by looking at me.
Just looking at you. Right off the bat.
One last thing. We break the world into three different types of people. Everybody falls into one of these classifications.
Okay.
People who like to run, people mm-hmm. who would like to run, and people who would like to run. Everybody falls okay. into one of those three segments. So I'm not sure where you are, Lee.
I'm going to give you the heads up. I started this business. I'm the founder of this business. But before that, I had a radio show called Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy. And I'm not Dr. Fitness.
To me, you are. To me, you are Dr. Fitness.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.